empower tutors to understand for themselves is that you have a choice. You don't have to get out and be a plumber. You don't have to get out and sell drugs. You don't have to get out and do anything that the system has designed for you, right? Because the system has a plan for you. It expects you to fail if you're incarcerated. It expects you to go back to prison. And what I tried to instill via the tutors, but also the tutors internalized this too on their journeys, the 37 that we certified over the years, internalized this, that you have a choice. And that can be scary and empowering at the same time, because if you end up back here, you know it's because you. And when you make it and you succeed and become somebody, that's also because you.
That was my conversation with Chris Randon, Tim Tipton, and Lauren Zavrell about The Rebel Academy. They're on the web at therebelacademy.org. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Join us again next week for another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
We want you to join us Saturday, September 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. for a special live broadcast during the Compassionate Living Festival, which runs from noon to 6 p.m. at Norse Hall in Portland. Tune in for our coverage featuring keynote speaker Erin Wing, an undercover investigator sharing her experiences with animals raised for slaughter. We'll also have panel discussions with experts on the benefits of a plant-based diet for people, animals, and the planet. That's September 28th, 2 to 5 p.m., live on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Why, I'm all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews. Stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
You're listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Sam Bowman. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with candidates from District 1, representing East Portland. We want you to join the conversation. You can call the air room with questions for candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message a question on the website, kboo.fm, and you can also email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. Let's meet our candidates for today. Today we've got Timur Ender, Candace Avalos, and Thomas Shervey here in the studio. And just in the... you can't see us, but I'm going to go clockwise and start with Timur. If all of you could just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you to running for office.
Sure. Timur Ender, he, him pronouns. Thank you so much for having us here today. A little bit about me. I'm a parent of three kids, including a child in the foster care system. My background is I'm the first in my family to be born in the U.S., child of Turkish immigrants. I moved to Portland in 2013 to attend Lewis and Clark Law School, and since then have had the privilege of working in the public interest. So have did an internship in Congressman Blumenauer's office, the Port of Portland, City Hall, and eventually ended up working in local government for about 6 years. And in that capacity, helped launch the fixed-speed safety cameras to keep our arterial safe, the bike share program, and the Fixing Our Streets program, which is a 10-cent local gas tax. And a lot of those projects have funded things like crosswalks, street lighting, curb ramps, street trees, and traffic signals in East Portland. And I had the privilege of managing those projects as a project manager at the Portland Bureau of Transportation, and worked with community groups and neighborhood groups. And when you're the city managing projects, you're pretty much everyone's neighbor. You're touching a whole lot of people. And so a little bit about why I decided to run. I felt that a number of perspectives were missing from city council, whether that's parents of young kids or former public sector union members, and people with experience working in city government. I've really enjoyed being on the campaign trail, have met great people and candidates. And so I will pass the mic on to Candace.
Great. Well, good evening. I'm Candace Avalo, she, her pronouns, and I'm running for Portland City Council because I just believe in our potential, and I have shown my love for the city by being part of helping to solve our biggest problems. A little bit about me, though. I am originally from Virginia, also moved in 2013 to Portland to be an educator. My family, I come from an immigrant family, Guatemalan immigrants on one side of my family, African Americans from Southern Virginia on the other, and started out my career as an educator. So I feel like that also is just a big part of my theory of change. I believe that everybody is a seed that needs watering, and I'm running because I believe that government needs to be watering our community. I think that looks a lot of different ways, but one angle that I come at it from is from my environmental justice lens as the executive director of Verde. We do a lot of work in East Portland, like ensuring that we're getting folks access to cooling devices, making sure that we're investing in infrastructure. And those are the kinds of things that, you know, the experiences, whether that be my executive experiences as a nonprofit director or my advocacy experience as somebody who sat on the Charter Commission, sat on the Police Accountability Board, helped move forward some big progressive changes. And so I'm hoping that between those two things and just my community-minded leadership, I can bring some much-needed representation to East Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. And Thomas?
Hi, I am Thomas Shervey. I was born and raised in Portland, all of it east of 82nd. You know, I attended Portland Public Schools. I went to Portland State University and got my degree in social sciences. I then worked in the Gateway neighborhood for over 10 years, still at work adjacent to the Gateway neighborhood. I'm a dad of two kids. My partner and I, we've decided to build our life in the Hazelwood neighborhood. And because I've lived where I've lived and worked where I've worked and studied where I've studied, I feel like I bring a unique perspective, or could bring a unique perspective, to the city council. I started running because I wanted to keep the conversation focused on the people of the East Side, because historically they have been underrepresented and ignored by our local government, and a lot of them have become disenfranchised and have lost faith in the local government. So I want to keep the conversation on what the average citizen would want and their voices, making sure they are uplifted. And I was very inspired to run once the Charter Commission did put that forward and the voters approved it. And now the Outer East Side has to be represented by people who live there. And that, you know, I just thought that is a complete game changer. And I want to keep the conversation focused on the people and make sure that they know that they have to represent themselves now. So, yeah.
Great. And I'd like to go off of what you were just saying. So I myself moved here in 2011 from east of the Mississippi, from a place where, you know, ward politics and districts are pretty much the norm. And I have always been surprised at kind of the elephant in the room of Portland's political system, which is half, if not more than half, of the city has rarely, if ever, had representation on the city council. That's your half. How does it feel to finally have the ability to represent East Portland on the city council, and what do you think is an issue that has been overlooked in East Portland? And I'll just go in reverse order now, Thomas.
So I think it's, to answer the second part first, I feel like it's just community engagement. What the people want. And from what I've seen and from the people I've talked to, there's a lot of focus on transit and transit opportunities, and there are still a lot of unimproved and unmaintained roads throughout Portland, but a lot of them are in, you know, District 1 on the east side. And so we are a modern city, and yet we have roads after roads of potholes that become lakes during the rainy season, and it's Portland, so we have a big rainy season. And so I see that, and I know a lot of the burden of paying for improving the roadways does fall on the homeowners, and of course we don't make as much money on the outer east side, on the east side. And so I see that, and it has never been addressed as long as I've lived there. I have lived on the east side of Montevilla during my childhood, and there are just roads that you can't walk through because of these potholes, because of these just holes, divots, whatever you want to call them. And yeah, so I see that, and that was the biggest issue, one of the biggest issues for me, that I just, like, it's such a simple thing, but it gets ignored, and, you know, people just don't have the money to fix it. And for the Charter Commission and the change of the city government, I know a lot, it's very inspiring, but I know a lot of people, because I worked at the Gateway for Admire for 10 years, a lot of people don't even really know about it, and they don't know, like, who their candidates are. They didn't know if they could run. They didn't know they had to represent themselves. And so that part was the really, like, you know, I got to get out there, you know, make sure people know. So, yeah.
Thank you. And Candace?
Yeah, as somebody who sat on the Charter Commission and spent several years researching good governance and just trying to understand what makes for a more inclusive representative democracy, it was obvious that geographic representation was a huge part of that puzzle. And for East Portland, you know, when I'm knocking on doors and talking to voters out there, 9 times out of 10, it's the first time anyone has ever talked to them from the quote-unquote government or from, you know, people seeking to earn their vote to represent them, because people didn't have to. They didn't have to canvass in East Portland. All of the political power is really concentrated on the inner east side and on the west side, and that is why our representatives have mostly come from there, and that is why those are parts of town that have seen more resources over the years that East Portland hasn't. And so this opportunity is golden for East Portland in particular, because we have a lot of catching up to do to the rest of the city, especially as it relates to basic infrastructure. I mean, as Thomas is saying, you know, it's very clear that we have neglected our streets, we've neglected our communities as a whole. And so I think that this is, you know, it's, and it's also, like Thomas is also saying, it's going to take some time for East Portlanders to, you know, understand this new change and how it's going to impact them. So, you know, I'm really eager to, you know, get through this election and then continue building on the grassroots community power that we're all doing by being out there and talking to voters. I think East Portland is going to benefit the most from that. And so I'm eager to see us continue those strategies as electeds.
Great. And Timor?
So East Portland has a life expectancy 10 years less than people living west of 82nd Avenue. This is due to higher rates of traffic crashes. It's due to higher rates of gun violence. And I think to answer your question, you know, in no area do we see the impact of disinvestment and a lack of political accountability than the area of gun violence. We have not had people on council who have had to live in areas with high incidence of gun violence. I have neighbors on either side of my house who've had bullets enter their windows. And so the people who have been in positions of power have not had to breathe our air, have not had to wait for a bus in East Portland, have not had to deal with gun violence or slow 911 calls during an emergency. And so To me, that is one of the biggest symptoms of historic underinvestment. One of the reasons I decided to run is because this is the first time there are geographic boundaries tied to East Portland's health outcomes. And so how I will be measuring my success is, have we reduced those disparities in life expectancy between East and West, and have we increased East Portland's life expectancy? And then what we see is, in areas where gun violence occurs are often the same location to the intersection where traffic crashes occur, and you look around and there's the street lights are insufficient, the tree canopy is insufficient. And so those are the things I want to be focused on in terms of, you know, doing things like a voluntary gun buyback program, violence interrupters, and working to really build community. We shouldn't have to ask people to fundraise for a movie in the park. That is one of the things that helps build community and is a key mitigation to addressing gun violence. So we have to do more in terms of supporting our community in that way.
All right. And so you are listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Sam Bowman. And today we're speaking with candidates from District 1, and in the order that you were just hearing them, it's Timur Ender, Candace Avalos, and Thomas Shervey. Join the conversation by calling in your questions to the AIR room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. Let's get back to our discussion. I want to get hyper-specific now after we've been talking kind of more generally. So one of the things that the new council will be tasked with, in addition to creating an entirely new way of working in the framework that was set up by the Charter Review Commission. Recently, the federal judge, Michael Simon, pushed back the implementation date for the city's police accountability system that was voted on by voters in 2020 and has been kind of in the creation stage for the last 3 to 4 years. He pushed back the implementation date from sometime this or next month to January, when the new council will be seated. And so that could be one, two, or all of you. How would you implement that system within the strictures that you've been given to do so? If anyone wants to take that one first.
Yeah, I can kick us off for context. So I was the chair of the old system's Police Accountability Board. So I was on the Citizen Review Committee for 7 years and chaired it for 4. And I was also a part of the coalition of folks that crafted and passed that measure in 2020. I think it was such an awesome way for us to mobilize quickly on a moment and take advantage of making some real progress, and that's what that measure did. So I, in general, I'm very supportive of us, you know, seeing that through. The judge made that decision, and you know, funnily enough, because I'm still friends with all the people in the old system, they're like, we hate that because, you know, we really were wanting to transition this out because we've just kind of been in limbo for so long. But I am okay with the decision because, honestly, the current people on our council have been hostile to police reform efforts, police accountability efforts. And so I think that, you know, what I'm assuming is the thinking behind his decision is to ensure that this new council that's going to be representative of the community is going to have to, like you say, we're going to have to change everything about how we govern and interact. So why not implement that at the same time? I see the logic there. And so I really don't think the couple of months, you know, in delay is really going to make much of a difference, especially given how many years it's been that we've been trying to implement this. As far as implementing it, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on like the current status of the exact language because, you know, the commission spent many years working on that, and then the city attorney's basically cut a bunch of it off. And so I don't know right now, so it's hard to say. Like, I would implement it exactly as is because I need to look more deeply at what state it's in right now and what, you know, I guess what the judge approved. But as far as how I would implement it, I mean, ultimately, I think it's an important part of the also the new structure, because we made it so that, one, the police chief is being overseen by the mayor, understanding that that is just such a sensitive part of our governance and government's power, having a police force and how they're wielding that responsibly for the people is really important. So we wanted to keep that accountability up at the mayor level. And I think, you know, the goal of this is to ensure, you know, we keep talking about community trust with police. Community trust does not happen without accountability. So until we establish a strong system that can really, truly, you know, at least two from my, let me step back and say real quick, from my opinion, a lot of the cases that I heard when I was on the Citizen Review Committee were kind of like miscommunications. You know, these were issues where bringing people together and saying, hey, you know, as an officer, this thing that you did harmed this person, it caused this, this, and that. And then just being like, okay, let's repair that. Unfortunately, in my experience, police have been even resistant to things like that. And so I feel like that's what is going to be our task, is how do we implement a system of accountability to a police force that has notoriously been resistant to it. But I think that we'll have the tools with the new form of government to do so.
Tamor or Thomas?
I can go first. You know, I don't know that I have a ton to add to that. What I would just say is, for me, if the voters approve something, that is a pretty high bar. And as someone whose job it is to, you know, that's ultimately my boss, is the voters of East Portland. And so I've been concerned when I see people in elected positions try to water down, you know, or remove funding from, or to change the scope of voter-approved measures, whether that's police accountability, whether that's Portland Clean Energy Fund. And so to me, I'll just make that commitment. If the voters approve something, I will do what I can to protect the spirit and intent of those measures, because ultimately, that is who I'm accountable to, and ultimately I'm proud to be a community oriented candidate, and so I will be proud to, you know, protect the will of the voters. I think that's pretty much all I have to say on that.
No, yeah, not too much to add. Oversight and communication are key, just because of the complete sensitive nature of policing in Portland. I work in a law enforcement adjacent area of the county, the Department of Community Justice, and just the the difficulty in communication between just branches of the justice system itself is just hard to tackle. And then adding into it just the sensitive nature of police work in Portland, oversight is required. And as Tamer said, like, the voters want this. So it needs to roll out. It needs to be, you know, solid, intact, and unadulterated. Or not watered down. That's a better way to say that.
Gotcha. All right. Anyone want to respond to anything? Okay. So another sort of more specific issue that some of you have brought up already is climate change and the effects that climate change is having on the city of Portland. Think just of the heat dome of the past few years, the repeated heat waves and ice storms, and the fact that East Portland itself is traditionally lacking in tree cover. What are some ways that the city council and that you on the city council could address those issues as they continue to unfold?
I'll take a whack at it. You know, continuing to improve the tree canopy in East Portland, and following through, making sure whatever department is in charge of watering the trees that are planted, or the nonprofit that is contracted to water the trees, actually follows through with that. Once again, oversight is super important in pretty much all aspects of government. But The extreme weather events that we've been experiencing, both summer and winter, are going to be more consistent, and they're just going to keep happening. But we, as a city, and from my perspective, a county, don't seem to have accepted that yet, because we have emergency shelters for when it plummets below certain degrees, or goes above certain degrees for warming shelters. But, you know, as soon as it dips below, say, 99 or goes above 32, they close, and we're still encrusted with ice, we're still encrusted with snow. So we need to approach this as a consistent year-long problem, because it's just going to become more frequent. Like, with ice and snow, we need to invest in the infrastructure and the equipment to deal with it, to free the city up so that we can continue running and we can get people to consistently staffed warming shelters. I know that's a county thing, but we need to partner with the county, because I know they are always scrambling for volunteers to work at them when they're open. So I know that the city and the county are two separate entities, but this is a big issue that I see every year, and it's just like, you know, hey, it's 32 degrees now, but we're still encrusted with ice, and now these people who have nowhere to go, well, they're out on the street, and it's slippery because we haven't invested in the right tools to deal with it. So, yeah, that's my bit on that.
Sure, I'll go next. I think one of the things that allowed the county to better approach the cooling shelters and warming shelters were that they allowed those county employees to be paid. And I think one thing that was missing was city employees did not have the same incentives to participate. So that's one thing I will be championing. We do have to get city government aligned on increasing East Portland's tree canopy, and really kind of have, I guess, you know, similar to permitting, you know, we have to have someone, a bureau, whose job it is to really ensure the strength of East Portland's tree canopy, whether that's urban forestry or whatever. But, you know, that needs to be a core mission. And then ultimately, you know, we know not everyone feels the same effects of climate change. East Portland has some of the highest mortality rates. And we know, you know, because of urban heat island effect, certain neighborhoods are much higher temperature on the same day than neighborhoods west of 82nd Avenue. And so I'm going to be someone who's committed to supporting Portland Clean Energy Fund and making sure it has the resources it needs. And then finally, we need to make sure we're reducing the carbon footprint of our transportation system. So that means, you know, whether that's transit signal priority, access to transit, bus rapid transit, bike share, or the transportation wallet program, which provides free rides or youth pass, all of these things, you know, survey after survey consistently shows people want to ride bikes, people want safe routes to school. And yet, you know, one of the reasons that is a barrier is safety. And so to the extent city government can provide those safe routes, we will see people using them. So that's part of my commitment as well.
Candace?
Yeah, I think what's important to remember about climate change is that it is not in the future, it is now. And the decisions that we make in growing our city are all climate related, because when the number one and number two emitters of greenhouse gases are transportation and buildings, then when we're talking about the investments in infrastructure, like making sure that we have more bus lanes, making sure that we have tree canopy, all of these things, how we're, you know, we all know that we have a housing crisis and we need to expedite housing production. And there's been some discussions this year in the city council where it was like, well, maybe we could loosen these environmental regulations and that'll help us build faster. And that is not the right approach, right? Because we have to build into the future, and building into the future means including climate protections for residents. And so I think definitely the Portland Clean Energy Fund is a really important opportunity to actually funnel dollars to that work, because all of that means nothing if there's no money to invest. But we have the money. I have a lot of opinions as an organization that receives PSEF dollars about how we could improve the delivery of those dollars. How can we make sure that we're equitably distributing them and, you know, not falling back into status quo, which is not having a strategic targeted approach, because as we've discussed, East Portland disproportionately feels the impacts of climate change. It is an environmental justice community, and these frontline community members need to be also at the forefront of deciding what happens next. And I think PSEF is an opportunity. I think having district representation is an opportunity to invest. But overall, my commitment is to ensuring that we understand as a city that every decision we make actually does have a climate nexus and acting accordingly.
Great. I want to thank you all for being here today and participating in this discussion. And so we are going to take a short music break and come back and talk more about housing and homelessness specifically. And just want to say all your names real quick. We are here with Candace Avalos, Tamar Ender, and Thomas Shervey. And you are listening to Running on Air here on KBOO Portland. You are listening once again to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm Sam Bowman, and I'm here with three candidates from District 1 representing East Portland. I have Candace Avalos, Tamar Ender, and Thomas Shervey. And you can join this conversation by calling in your questions to the Air Room at 503-231-8187, messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, or you can email us at runningonair@kboo.org. And you won't be the first. We got one coming in already. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. And I'd just like to jump back into the conversation here. We had a listener call in. So Joan asks, how would you approach improving conditions in East Portland while avoiding gentrification? And would anyone like to jump in on that one? Tamar?
Sure. Yeah, I don't mind. So just first of all, out of all the council districts, East Portland has some of the greatest displacement risk in the whole city. What I see at my child's elementary school is, you know, people priced out of inner Portland moving east, and that puts even greater pressure on East Portland. There's a few ways, you know, the role of city government, a few ways we can address this. One is, you know, when the city does projects, we have to make sure that people feel these projects are for them. That might mean local hiring. It might mean project labor agreements. It might mean public art that reflects the diversity of our community. It might be tree canopy, which consistently shows up as one of the highest priorities for city projects. And when projects miss the mark or they lack a key element, that sends the signal to residents that this project is not for you. Council's role is to insist that we get those elements right. And sometimes that may mean pausing a project. It may mean adding more funding. It may mean kind of other strategic decisions, but that's one thing that we can do. And then, you know, efforts to stabilize cost. So one of the things that's happening now is the tax increment financing proposal, Prosper Portland. And so that's something we need to watch carefully to make sure it aligns with our community's goals of, you know, addressing displacement. And then we also need to listen, and the best time to address these is up front. I'll just give one quick example of, so they were doing this project in DC, that in an area where there was a high displacement risk. And one of the things they incorporated was money set aside for kids to be able to attend college that lived in that community. So it made a very clear statement that this project is for you. We're doing what we can to stabilize you and that you can continue to live here. So we just need to be, those decisions are, you can't do that in the aftermath. They have to be upfront and part of the core project design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go next. This is a huge part of our mission, actually, at Verde, because we have been working in the Cali neighborhood, which is not technically our district, but adjacent in District 2. And what we see is, and what we all know and understand about gentrification, is that when you give community members who have lacked in resources, you invest in them, then they get pushed out because the just generally the market goes up, right? The prices go up. Then people say, oh, this is an attractive place to live. Look, they got sidewalks. They've got a park, right? And so that is why that happens at a very like layman's term like view. And so I think what's important in some of the strategies that we've been doing in Cully that I think we could apply in East Portland, one of them is the tax increment financing. And it's important for people to know and understand TIF has typically been a tool of gentrification, actually. But what we did in the Cully neighborhood in the first ever community-led TIF district that we created an infrastructure. We made this kind of charter, essentially, with Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau to put some strong boundaries of how we're going to use the revenue generated in a way that is driven by the voices of the people that live in that community. Because what has typically happened is these TIF districts, they generate, you know, dollars, and then they end up pushing people out because they put in new amenities, they don't talk to the communities, and that is what, you know, Portland has historically done. Albina is a perfect example of that. And so I think that, you know, there's some discussion about, you know, TIF districts in East Portland, and I'm keeping a close eye on it because while this is a really innovative way that we're trying to approach anti-displacement, we need to be watchdogs on it because the market does all kinds of things. Like, we can't guarantee that it will stay community driven unless we continue to advocate for it. So I think that's a really good reason why having representatives in East Portland combined with this discussion we're having about East Portland's TIF is a good way for us as counselors to be able to oversee that and ensure that it is not displacing people. But I think ultimately, you know, we need to lift up our entire community. Every single person, no matter your income, deserves to live in a community rich with amenities. And so while we're also working to build the, you know, economic strength of our communities, when we're doing that also in our infrastructure projects, I think together we'll be able to find a way to keep people in their homes and in their communities. So that's the goal.
Thomas?
Well, not a heck of a lot to add, but just to piggyback off of one major point that they both made is that, yeah, these decisions and these problems have to be tackled head on. Like, if you have to ask what the problem is, it's already too late. And so I feel like government outreach to the people of District 1, to the people of the East Side, through, you know, even if we don't get offices out in the district, like, town halls, meeting with the neighborhood associations consistently so people know who they can go to, where the buck stops, because like I've said before, people have lost faith in our city government. They don't know who they can go to. They see the inefficiency and they don't know exactly where their complaints go, if anywhere. A lot of people don't, you know, make those complaints. So just making sure the outreach is there, that people can bring their problems to us ahead of time or while they're building, would be just my piece on that.
And kind of moving on from this issue, there's housing in general is a major topic of conversation, a major crisis across the city of Portland that manifests in its own way in East Portland, and the way that it ties in with the homelessness crisis that we are facing. How would you approach those intertwined topics and some of the ongoing collaborations with the county, for example, and multiple nonprofits, as well as, you know, ongoing efforts to address those issues that, you know, will remain when the council changes over. How do you plan to address that? And I'll just go in reverse order this time. Thomas, if you want to go.
Sure. So, yeah, with the housing shortage crisis, or you know, a lack of available multifamily units or low-income housing, I would want to just wield the city government's power like a club and just beat that problem down. I would want to use land banking to purchase vacant land for the specific intent of creating affordable housing, multifamily units. The Broadway Corridor project comes to mind as something that has already been land banked, but we need to actively seek out more sites, particularly those that have like main arterial connections or existing infrastructure, just specifically for that, to sell to developers, to work with developers on that. And then we could have the city commit to joint ventures with established companies to help achieve lower interest rates, from the banks to build such, low income, multifamily units, stuff like that. And a big issue, from what I understand, is the permitting and development bureau's budget is rather seasonal, because building takes place in part of the year and whatnot. So their staff is rather seasonal. I would stabilize their budget, give them a yearly allotments, so they have a consistent staff that can efficiently process permits, so they don't have to train new people, so that there's not a backlog of permits, so that we can get people building, with the specific intent of, creating housing that is affordable and that can be accessed by, multifamilies. And then finally, I would want to work with the state to continue funding and increase funding to the LIFT housing program, which creates affordable rental units with grants, loans, tax credits, and
Candace?
I don't believe that we're lacking in ideas for these solutions. We're lacking in strategic leadership. Because ultimately, what I've learned in the last couple of years as somebody who has been in rooms with housing and homelessness providers, the thing that I hear the most from them is just that nobody talks to them, nobody seeks out their expert advice. It gets overly politicized to the point where people get put into these camps instead of saying, we all have answers to these problems, but you have to combine those answers. And, of course, as a leader, right, you're navigating budgets, you're navigating politics, you're navigating what's short term versus long term. And I think ultimately, all of the ideas, Thomas named a whole bunch of them, which are really good best practices, is what we're saying, and all of the candidates are saying it, but what we need is actually leadership, and we need collaboration, because what I think a really good example of this disconnect between the city and the providers working with these communities is what happened with the TAF site, right? The Urban Alchemy got flown in from California to come manage this site. But what people don't understand is the reason why is because there's a lack of relationships. The burden that that site was going to put on our what is it, on our providers, our homelessness providers, they were like, these are the things that work, these are not the things that work, right? And so, but they were ignored. And so they weren't brought in as true partners. And so we're outsourcing, you know, support for something that we have so much resource, human and financial resource here in the city of Portland to address. So I could sit here and rattle off a lot of policies, but I think ultimately my values are around making sure that we are leading and that as a good partner to the county, to all the different intergovernmental levels, and to the people that work on the ground with folks. I mean, I'm on the board of Street Roots. I hear from our unhoused community all the time. And the most frustrating thing they feel is that it's not that they don't want help. It's that when they get help, it's never what they need. And it's not consistent. Right. So it's like, OK, we're going to start putting you through the system, and then somehow they fall through the cracks and then forgotten. And so understandably, people who have been jostled around across the city, they're hesitant when they see a city worker say, hey, I'm here to help you, because they have a lived experience that shows that that's not the case. So I really think that more important than the actual policies and strategies is the leadership.
And Timor?
Sure. I'll just kind of mention a few things. You know, one of the frustrations I see right now is that there are people sleeping outside of vacant land that is owned by the government. And so we have an obligation to put that to use, whether that's, you know, TriMet-owned land or the city-owned land. One of the things I'd like to do is, you know, take a comprehensive look of city-owned land that could be deemed surplus and turned into housing. We also need to do more to keep people in their homes. One of the most frightening statistics right now is that the demographic that is experiencing the highest rate of becoming homelessness is people over the age of 55. And as someone who's worked in city government and managed $30 million of city projects, you know, and looks at things from a budgetary perspective, that is a really hard group of people to address financially. And so the more we can do, the more dollars we put toward prevention and keeping people in their homes, the more success we're going to have. And then, you know, other things too, like zoning tools. I'm a supporter of Inner East Side for All. And then looking at what sorts of requirements we're putting on people so that, you know, you shouldn't have to build expensive street just to put in one house. And so we need to look at a little bit more flexibility, and then just small things like single stair reform that allows developers to only put in one set of stairs with enhanced life and fire safety requirements. That saves costs and allows different project types to pencil out financially. And then unbundling. So if you don't have a car, you shouldn't be paying rent that is included in your car. So that's one thing Seattle has done is if you are a tenant and you don't have a car, you pay one price. If you do have a car, then you're paying others. And what that does is, for the people who are using public transit, that immediately has the effect of reducing their rent cost.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. And once again, you are listening to Running on Air. This is a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Sam Bowman. We are speaking with Timor Ender, Candace Avalos, and Thomas Shervey, in the order that you just heard them speak. You can join the conversation by calling in your questions to 503-231-8187, though I warn you, we have about 15 minutes left. And we do have a question from a listener, Tim. How do you think Portlanders should stay in communication with their counselors in the new system? And he also suggests a regular newsletter, but I'll throw this to Timur. What do you say to Tim?
Sure. I would say, you know, I like the idea of a regular newsletter. My overall vision for this is there is no wrong way to contact what you need in city government. If you have an issue with a street, you should be able to go to PBOT, Portland Bureau of Transportation. You should be able to go to the deputy city and manager that oversees public works. You should be able to go to the city manager's office. You should be able to go to the staff assistant that is shared for East Portland City Councilors. You should be able to go to that elected official. You should be able to go to that elected official staff. And so the idea for me is there is no wrong door to having input. And I am going to be championing district offices. And, you know, we have to make sure that there is redundancy in communication. Different people hear about things from different ways. You know, the bureaus are going to do their own engagement for different projects. But, you know, I'm so happy that the people who were in charge of setting the salaries for this new form of government really created a living wage and said, you are not allowed to do anything else. And that's ultimately why I ran for office, because this is, in my view, this is a dream job, to be able to get up every day, go to work, and serve your community. It's just huge. And so I will be doing everything I can to kind of continue that. And one last thing is, for me, it's important that I stay grounded. So one of the things I like to do is pick up soccer games at the street across my house and taking public transit. I feel both of those things do a lot to keep me grounded, and I will absolutely continue doing those things and going to community events, because I think that is a key part of being accessible. You know, if someone sees me at a community event and they want to talk about housing policy, great. You know, that's what I'm here for.
Candace?
One thing that I've been saying since I ran last time, so I ran in 2020 for city council, and it was a really eye-opening experience in many ways, but I think one thing that has stuck with me is why we don't use the same kinds of grassroots strategies that we use when we're campaigning when we're in office. To be fair, I honestly don't believe that the current city councilors in the current form of government, they don't have capacity to do constituent services. And so that is why we made these changes, so that we can have full-time people living in their community dedicated to those kinds of services, including things like newsletters, including things like having regular community meetings for feedback. And I think that includes things like knocking on people's doors and talking to them directly. That is what I intend to do as a city councilor. Totally agree with everything that Tamora is saying, that, you know, helping, like, us staying grounded is a really important part of our job. And I think I've heard another candidate say this, I'm totally stealing it from her, but I love this idea where she says, we need to make sure that we are at least 3 of the 5 days of the week in our district, because we know that East Portlanders, they're not going to come all the way down to City Hall in downtown to talk to us, and that's not the best way to reach them. And so I think us really committing to this new infrastructure with the district offices and creating just various types of events or procedures, because, you know, again, we're going to have to create all of this. I'm not fully sure how this is going to work, but I would love to see things like having, like, just East Portland City Council meetings, right? Like, we're going to have larger ones with everybody, but I think we should have our own things too, and I think that's going to go a long way in people feeling like that we're accessible to them.
Thomas?
No, yeah, just having a consistent schedule of community events where people can engage with their city councilors would be great. Like, just a consistent calendar of, here's the town hall, here's where it's at, and that's what it's going to be for the year. You know where we're going to be. You know what, you know, you can come talk to us. And just like an open door policy too, like, everyone should know their city councilors, and they should be able to approach them and, you know, say, hey, I have a problem, my street's not paved, or, you know, my house is on fire, come put it out, you know, something like that. Just that level of engagement. We need to bring the government to the people, because they have been so underserved, you know, that we need to go to the community, and we need to go to the neighborhood association meetings consistently. You know, I think it should be a requirement that every neighborhood association meeting should be attended by that district city councilors, just so they know what's going on. Just that basic level of uplifting the voice of just your average people on the east side. And we, like, you know, Candace said, like, should be knocking on doors after the election, because people have been underserved, because people have been ignored, and they don't know who their government representative is, because, you know, they feel like they don't matter. So, yeah, just have to go that extra mile and bring the government to the people.
Can I add one more thing?
Absolutely.
That I forgot to mention. So what I'm understanding right now about how they're structuring the new government is they're really going to be putting a lot of onus on 311. So right now, 311, you can call with kind of lots of different requests. But it's my understanding that the city administrator office is trying to make that a more central part of a way that people can access their government, and like reporting a pothole or saying, you know, I need this service in this community. So it's on my platform. One of my platform points is I really think we need to beef up and staff up our 311 system to just have a more consistent, easy way for people to just reach us, and then that be sorted to us as appropriate. But I think us having a number that we can turn to and we can tell community members that this is the one of the quick ways that you can be heard, I think is going to be huge.
Right, and we are running a little low on time, so this might be a bit of a heavy question to pack into the last few minutes here. But Portlanders are very angry. I think if I am, you know, not everyone and not all the time, but that seems to be a very animating feature of the electorate right now. In office, how, and maybe this is a little vague, but you probably thought about it, how would you absorb that anger? Because a lot of it can take the form of stigma against people experiencing homelessness, against just people who are unlike the speaker, can ask for very quick, brutal solutions to very deep problems. And so I just, again, that's a little general, but I'm just curious what you've thought about is about that dynamic. And I'll just go back around the table here, Thomas.
So yeah, people are angry about a lot of stuff just because they feel like they've been underserved. And sometimes people just need to get that out. And they are seeing problems that they don't see active solutions to. And so they just put out the most extreme thing in their head. And I feel like the solution to that is to just sit down and talk it out with them. Because, I mean, I work in basically parole and probation, and people come in there with big feelings, as my son would say. And sometimes you just need to let them express them and then talk them out and figure out what they actually need, or how they can actually be better served, or what service that they need to be pointed to, or the deficiency that the government has and how we can better address that. So I really think the key is just sometimes that anger is just the root cause is a lacking on the part of the city government to address their basic needs, the people's basic needs. And sometimes you just got to get it out, and sometimes you just got to talk it out. At least that's what we do with my son and his big feelings. So, you know.
Thank you. Candace?
Yeah, I mean, I share and understand Portlanders' anger and frustration. I'm also angry because it is clear that our city has not delivered on our promise. And so I think what I'm also understanding, just I'll talk about my neighbors in particular. So I live in this kind of missing middle housing, if you will. I live in like a little townhome community, and we've got an active WhatsApp chat where we, you know, keep each other safe and updated. And I think that has been such a microcosm of what I see is happening in the city. I see this like really strong tension between feeling like I want my street to be safe. I want to walk my dog and not be harassed. I don't want to run into needles. I don't want to run into trash, and an understanding that when they sweep, people know that when people get swept, they don't have options, right? They know that they're getting displaced, and they know it's a waste of money and it's a waste of time. And so I think what I've learned just talking to people on the doorstep is, you know, you can kind of disarm people's anger a little bit by showing them that there are real pathways forward, and by showing them that this representation is going to make a difference in how they're heard. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is to really understand and accept where that anger is coming from and find solutions. That's ultimately what Portlanders want, and I think this new form of government and this type of representation is going to start to chip away at that anger, is my hope.
Tamar?
I agree with Candace. I am angry too. That's why I decided to run, you know, 15 months ago, and it's been a long road. And I'll just say a few things. You know, you have my commitment as a city official that one of the best antidotes to that sentiment is making sure we are making the best use of taxpayer dollars. And that is going to be huge in terms of you know, really seeing movement, you know, if you don't have unlimited money when you're working in government. So if you're going to use that money to sweep someone, okay, you're kind of, in a sense, undermining your own goals. And so we have to be strategic about how we are using our limited taxpayer dollars. And I think, you know, East Portland, there was a sentiment where we are overtaxed and underserved. And so I think that resonates with people. The other thing I'll say, too, is if you're angry, I want to hire you. I want you to work in city government so you can have a role in addressing these challenges, because this work is not easy. And, you know, public sector work is underappreciated. It's undervalued, and this is really meaningful and important work. So I would love to hire some of these people who are angry, and let's work together to address some of these issues, because this is not something that one person can solve on their own. It's going to take all of us working together.
Great. I appreciate all of your clock discipline. And I want to wrap up, just go quickly around the table, give everybody a last chance to hear your voice and let them know where they can find out more about your campaign. Timur?
Sure. Timur Ender, our website is ender4eastportland.com. It's the number 4. And our Instagram is enderineastportland. And I'll pass it on.
Candace?
Thank you so much for this opportunity to talk directly with voters, and I'm really excited about what representation for East Portland will mean for all of Portland. You can find more information at candace4portland.com, and all of my social media handles are at candace4pdx. Thank you.
Thomas?
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity. For the most up-to-date information, you can check out my TikTok, which is Thomas4District1, or you can check me out on Facebook, I think, too. It's just Thomas Shervey for District 1, and we try and keep those updated with my wheelings and dealings. So, yeah.
Great. I really want to thank you all for being here today and for putting yourselves out there for the people of East Portland. You have been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Thomas Shervey, Timur Ender, and Candace Avalos from District 1, which is East Portland. You can find all of the episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to all the KBOO volunteers who helped make this happen. Our producer and engineer is Althea Billings, and our editor is Eric Leuschner. Tune in to the next episode of Running on Air tomorrow. It will be with candidates from District 2 at 10 a.m. I've been your host, Sam Bowman. Thanks for listening.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners. Broadcasts every